a disease of the body. I was most pleased several years ago to be invited as a representative of the American Society of Bariatric Physicians, a medical scientific society devoted to the study of obesity and allied conditions, to attend an annual convention of Overeaters Anonymous. I have since then attended several others. I was also privileged to attend some local group meetings. The basic concept of OA is that compulsive overeating is a disease which affects the person on three levels: physical, spiritual, and emotional. Members of OA feel that, like alcoholics, they are unable to control their compulsion permanently by unaided willpower. Obesity is unquestionably one of the major health problems in the US today. In fact, it is a problem common to all affluent societies. Estimates as to the number of overweight individuals in the US range from 10 million to more than 70 million, depending on what criteria are used to classify an individual as obese. Furthermore, in recent years, there has been a steady increase in the number of overweight individuals. This is due to many factors. Chief among them is our success in creating an abundant food supply while our physical activity continues to diminish. To indicate the magnitude of this menace, a Gallup poll in 1973 revealed that 46% of Americans polled felt they were overweight, while less than 8% thought they were underweight. Out of every 10 persons, 4 or 5 were doing something to control their weight. Wow, this is kind of outdated, but I'm going to keep reading. Senator George McGovern's committee hearings disclosed that obesity nourishes a $10 billion industry, with $100 million yearly being spent for reducing drugs alone. The U.S. Public Health Service estimates that at least 60 million Americans weigh more than they should. The most disturbing problem is that perhaps less than 5% of dieters are able to maintain weight loss for at least 5 years. And then I'll go down to this little asterisk. As of 2000, 55% or 97 million adults in the US are overweight or obese, with at least 33% of adults considered overweight and 22% considered obese. Obesity-related medical conditions now contribute to 300,000 deaths in the US each year. The total US cost attributable to obesity amounted to over $99 billion in 1995. Over half of those dollars were direct medical costs. Obesity has been recognized since 1985 as a chronic disease and is now the second leading cause of preventable death, exceeded only by cigarette smoking. Pass.
I could read, are we on, I have the third edition. As a physician, is that the next?
Yes.
Okay. Mary, recovering food addict. As a physician, my main concern with the obese is the medical risks to which their obesity exposes them. Such persons have a greater than 40% chance of dying in any given from heart disease, a greater than 30% chance of dying from coronary artery disease, a greater than 50% rate from cerebrovascular disease or strokes, as well as an increased death rate from many other diseases. It has been pointed out recently that the risk of developing diabetes is increased twofold by an increase of 20% in body weight. In women, there is a significant increase in the development of uterine cancer associated with excess body weight. In a recent study of 75,000 fat women, there were 16 diseases associated with obesity. Furthermore, obesity predisposes to high blood pressure, gallbladder disease, and the formation of gallstones requiring surgery. Even babies born of obese mothers have more than twice the infant mortality of babies whose mothers' weights are normal. More individuals who join Overeaters Anonymous are aware of these risks, but like alcoholics, they're unable to control their compulsion on any lasting basis. They have completely lost faith in life and in themselves. In OA, hands of understanding and strength are extended to them by people who suffer the same compulsion and who are now examples that there is an answer. This probably explains OA's success with the hopeless, obese person who has repeatedly failed with the usual methods of weight control. I was particularly impressed with the extreme friendliness and even love between members that was easily observable at meetings. Pass.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. Many OA members are former participants and dropouts of commercial weight control groups. I observed a number of individuals who had been unsuccessful in the commercial organizations, but who had reached and maintained normal weight for a number of years after having joined Overeaters Anonymous. On being asked why they switched organizations, they were quick to inform me that the continual preparation of free foods and general preoccupation with food, as sometimes expounded, only kept their food compulsion alive. When compulsive overeaters realize that they cannot control their eating behavior, they need to accept and depend upon another power, a power acknowledged to be greater than oneself. The interpretation of this power is left to the individual. Many, perhaps most, members of OA adopt the concept of God, but newcomers are merely asked to keep an open mind on this subject, and usually they find it's not too difficult to work out a solution to this very personal problem, even if they are atheistic or agnostic. Pass.
I'm Leslie, compulsive reader. I went and got my two copies of OA, and one of them's the third and one of them's the first, so I don't have the one, I guess, that Jan is using, but I think we're doing the same thing. Psychologically, the obese individual is helped to attain a sense of the reality and nearness of a greater power, which replaces one's egocentric nature. Then the person's point of view and outlook will take on a spiritual coloring. Hence, one no longer needs to maintain a defiant individuality, but can live in peace and harmony with the environment, sharing and participating freely, especially with other members of the group. This is a great therapeutic weapon that I, a physician who has dealt with obese people for more than 27 years, can appreciate. The obese individual no longer defies, but accepts help, guidance, and control from the outside. As OA members relinquish their negative, aggressive feelings toward themselves and toward life, they find themselves overwhelmed by positive feelings of love, friendliness, tranquility, and a pervading contentment. These latter feelings were evident among the groups I attended. Pass.
I'll go ahead and read. A word frequently heard in OA groups is surrender. It can best be described as letting go. The individual gives up personal rigidities, relaxes, and admits to being beaten by compulsive overeating. The source of this feeling is almost always despair, which is so prevalent in newcomers to the group. It is all part of a crisis experience with an overload of hopelessness. In the act of surrender, one does not just give up, but accepts a power greater than oneself, reducing the ego, admitting the need for outside help. The quote unquote ego reduction can be very profitable to the personality makeup of this person. It is important to differentiate between submission and surrender. In submission, an individual accepts reality consciously, but not unconsciously. There is acceptance that one cannot at the moment conquer reality, but lurking in the unconscious is the feeling that there will come a day when I'll be able to handle my problem on my own. Submission implies no real acceptance of one's inadequacy. On the contrary, it demonstrates conclusively that the struggle is still going on. Submission is, at best, a superficial yielding, with the inner tension still present. When the individual accepts on an unconscious level the reality of not being able to handle compulsive overeating, there is no residual battle, relaxation ensues with the freedom from strain and conflict. This freedom is the aim of the OA groups, and complete surrender is manifested by the considerable degree of relaxation, which is evident in the behavior of those who have achieved it. Pass.
Okay, I'm a compulsive eater. Once compulsive overeaters surrender at the unconscious level, their compliance with the disciplines of the program does not lessen with time, leading to the inevitable regaining of weight. They continue to get messages from the unconscious that the need for outside help will remain for a prolonged, if not indefinite, period. Their wholehearted cooperation is then forthcoming, and constructive action takes the place of skin-deep assurances that they will merely comply temporarily until the memory of their suffering and self-pity weakens and the need for compliance lessens. Surrender, then, is an unconscious event. It is not willed by the individual. It can occur only when one becomes involved with one's unconscious mind and a set of circumstances which signal the undeniable need for an external greater power. The definition of surrender can be understood only when all its unconscious ramifications and true inner meaning are glimpsed. Observed by others, such an individual manifests an inner calm and a live and let live attitude. In analyzing Overeaters Anonymous, I have reached a number of conclusions. There appears to be a deep shift in the individual's emotional tone, the disappearance of one set of feelings and the emergence of a very different set. The member moves from a negative state of mind to a positive one. This may have the earmarks of a spiritual conversion, but that be that as it may, it is an effective transformation and essential for long-term success. By this, I do not mean to imply that there are never any slip-ups. Indeed, there are, but they are usually due to overconfidence as people are successful in the program and once again become too preoccupied with themselves. As long as they attend group meetings, help is immediately available, inspiring them to return to abstinence and to the 12 steps of recovery. They are neither judged nor scolded. There are no weigh-ins. They can share their past experiences, their present problems, and their hopes for the future with those who understand and support them and who speak their own language. Working with a sponsor, the individual converses with a person who has been through similar experiences. Thus, the communication between the two is on the same level. When OAs become sponsors themselves, their loneliness is greatly alleviated. They are needed and accepted. This has a very potent, positive influence on weight maintenance. I'll pass.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. OA literature suggests that the newcomer visit a doctor to decide upon a plan of eating suited to both physical needs and family habits. I can verify that this was indeed the policy with a number of patients whom I have referred to this group. OA.
I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. OA literature suggests that the newcomer visit a doctor to decide upon a plan. There, she's back.
There's no other organization, lay or professional, that has such a profound influence on the compulsive overeater's thinking. And after all, it is our thoughts that precede our emotions. And it is our emotions that make us eat inappropriately and become physically obese. Recovery in OA is on all three levels. It may seem a tall order, but one which has the greatest chance for success. It has been an honor and a most exciting experience for me as a professional to have had the opportunity to get to know the members of Overeaters Anonymous. I will forever be grateful to them for the good work they do in combating a major health problem in the United States. Peter G. Lindner, MD. Dr. Lindner was past president of the American Society of Bariatric Physicians and chairman of its board of trustees of Overeaters Anonymous in recognition of his work in the field of obesity and compulsive overeating and his efforts to bring the OA program to the attention of the medical community and the general public. Dr. Lindner passed away in 19.
Thank you. My name is Ruby and I'm a compulsive overeater. I just wanted to back up to the statistics, because I went online to look at the statistics after reading that and realizing how outdated it was. And I don't have numbers, but we know that the statistics are much greater than that right now. But one of the facts that I just thought was so sad is that the generations that are being born today aren't going to live as long as like I do, they predict, because of the unhealthy habits that our culture has. And I felt kind of sad about that. And then I had this aha moment about the conscious and the unconscious, and I've always kind of been fuzzy about that, not quite knowing what that meant, but it hit me. Okay, so my conscious is like where my ego resides, and my unconscious is where it doesn't reside. And so having learned how to access that part of me that can connect to something spiritual has been critical. And I'm so grateful that I can do that. I was in a relationship with somebody who's an overeater. And of course I can, like in taking their inventory, I'm not doing it like in a malicious way, but I'm trying to figure out, why did I even do this? And one of the things that I saw was the ego and how there was no surrendering, no access to the unconscious. And, you know, it made me feel sad, but it was an example, I think, that I needed to see. And I didn't access my spiritual side until I got beaten down and had to accept that this was life or death. And that's another thing that I didn't see too much in this reading. But to me, this is like alcoholism and drug addictions, a matter of life or death. I've been pre-diabetic off and on in my adult life. And because of OA and using a sponsor and doing the things that are suggested, I was able to get my A1C levels down to like 5.1, which to me is huge. You know, and over a prolonged, like for about the past 3 years now, I've had a really low, and I pretty much don't have diabetes, but I have to, it's like now, because of my habits, I always have the potential to have it. If I relapse, it's immediately back, just like that, which I was shocked to find out. I thought it would take a matter of time. Like I'd get a good year of overeating before things went bad. And it's like, nope, it goes bad right away. So anyway, that's all I have to say. I don't think we're going to get to the disease of the spirit. So with the remaining time, if people want to share their thoughts about Appendix B, that would be great. Thanks.
I'm Wendy, grateful recovering food addict. Very, very grateful for your sharing today, Ruby, and for both these appendices. Gosh, they really are just so wonderful. Couple of the things that I wrote down is what you mentioned, the difference between submission and surrender. I think it took me a while to get from submission to surrender in early abstinence, but I stayed abstinent anyway while I grew that my relationship with the higher power. I could not surrender until I had a safe higher power that I trusted. But I was, ironically, I could only find that higher power and trust it by being abstinent, because otherwise I'd go to the food. When abstinent, I had to go to God and the program, and that increased my trust level. Another thing I wrote down is thoughts precede emotions. And all this week, I've been writing down erroneous beliefs that I inherited from my mother. It's been very intense, very intense. And So this is just another piece that all those erroneous beliefs that I inherited from her on a cellular level create my emotions, despair, hopelessness, no faith in my ability to face life. She had no faith in her ability. And I'm in Prescott right now, and we're going back to Green Valley, south of Tucson, on Tuesday. The temperature's been in the hundreds, and they're going to go higher into like 110s. And I've been struggling with despair and hopelessness and depression and escapism. But this has helped me to realize that I just need to surrender. There's really not much that I can do except what everybody else does to cope. And one day at a time, I am able to face this. And I have to believe in myself and my higher power. Thank you. Great to be here.
Barbara, compulsive overeater. I just have to add, I so agree. It's wonderful to read this and also to hear experience and strength and hope on these really interesting developments in our program over the years. And just starting with Roseanne's story of how very, I mean, it's like all of this was arranged. So here we are now after she just made these crazy discoveries in her own life that led us to be here sitting here today. So I'm grateful for that. The one thing I was writing on this morning was about how I kept coming back to AA to lose weight, and then I'd lose the weight, and then I'd, okay, got it, see ya. And I'd go away and I'd gain the weight back. And then I'd come back and I'd lose the weight. And I thought, well, that really works. It's just that you have to go through this process of admitting where you're wrong and all that. But, you know, I'm getting better at that. So I'm coming back and I'm losing weight and I'm coming back. I don't know how many times I did that. But what happened the last time, it was 10 years before I got back. And what was interesting was all those times that I came back and I lost weight, not one time did I hear, this is a spiritual program. These may not be spiritual. Everything's not, is maybe threefold. It's physical, it's emotional, it's mental, and it's spiritual. But the solution is spiritual. The 12 steps are spiritual program. And I ignored that every single time. And I had to come back until I was ready to hear it. And it's working, and it does work, but it only works because I'm working the steps. Anything else is just a temporary diet, and it doesn't work. I hate to say that if anybody's trying to do it that way, but that's how it was for me. That's just my experience. Thank you.
Hi, this is Wanda, grateful recovering compulsive overeater. And yep, that couple of sentences around, there appears to be a deep shift in the individual's emotional tone, the disappearance of one set of feelings and the emergence of a very different set. The member moves from a negative state of mind to a positive one. This may have the earmarks of a spiritual conversion. And I had never noticed that. I've read this appendix a few times over the last few years, but I love it because I was disappointed that we weren't getting to the next one, the next appendix in this meeting, because until I was willing to surrender and start to trust, I think that was the big thing. I had lack of trust issues, huge. And so I couldn't trust you. I couldn't trust me. I couldn't trust me to say that, oh, I won't eat that. I couldn't trust a higher power because I didn't have a relationship in that sort of way. I had a God and a religion and a social life that revolved around attending a, you know, certain place that where they served lots of foods that are destructive and toxic to me as a form of love. Here, eat this. I made it special just for everyone so that you could enjoy. Well, come to find out, my body reacts so negatively to that, that yeah, that wasn't a real good definition of love. Love to me now is that, I get to eat the foods that fuel my body and give me strength and energy and relieve the arthritis and relieve the things that both of my parents succumbed to because of this disease untreated in them. And so, I'm thankful, Ruby, that you let us read these today. Thanks for being here. And I really just am grateful for this group. It's blazing hot in Palisade, 100 on the forecast today. So I'm with you, Wendy. What the heck? I'd much rather be in Alaska, but we are where we are, and acceptance is the key. Love you guys. Bye. Yeah.
I'm Karen, a compulsive overeater, and thank you, Ruby. Thank you so much for sharing this. And I guess I have a different book, but anyway, I was able to finally follow along in some parts, and I loved the reading. And, you know, I always thought that emotions made me think a certain way instead of the other way around. So that was kind of an aha for me, too. That it's really my judgment of a situation that and what I think about it that causes the emotion. So that was a good one for me. Also, it's just stood out to me when somebody when it was the doctor talking about his patients, saying that they had a negative aggressive feelings toward themselves. It's like, boy, I identified almost immediately. That was exactly how I came into these rooms, is with this so angry at myself for the failure that I haven't been able to get control of this. I mean, just so much anger. And then, you know, to go from that to like what Wanda was saying, to find a higher power and to finally get that peace that is really indescribable. And if it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't know about that. So I really appreciated that. And thanks again, Ruby.
Hi, I just want to thank you very much for having us read this and mention that there's another appendix in the third edition called The Role of a Plan of Eating in Recovery. And I haven't read the Overeaters Anonymous book for a while. I can see all this yellowed and underlined, but I don't remember. So obviously it's time for me to read it again. And in fact, not remembering there was another appendix, which apparently I studied with two different workshops. So a great reminder, and what wonderful, wonderful words. And I certainly agree with them. Thank you very much, Ruby.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I just want to say thank you to Ruby for having us read these. And it's something that I would like to read more regularly, but maybe I can start that at this time. Thank you all for being here.
I am Leslie, I'm a food addict. And I think that, you know, when we mentioned that this is a killing disease, so life or death situation, it's it might not be as quick and apparent as addiction. But it is slow and painful and devastating with the secondary diseases that happen and the destruction of the body and the mind and the spirit. And it's, you know, the group is very supportive, and I have to be willing to put down the food. I have to be willing to put down all the food that causes me to have cravings. If I don't have those food in my body, then I won't have the cravings, and I can stay abstinent if I work the spiritual program, because otherwise my mind's going to say, oh, you can have it. You know, it'll talk me back into it. And that's the baffling aspect of this disease. And the length that people go to get the food that they want or that they need, or they make excuses for it, it's just astounding. And I've been having an argument with one of my children about this food place that she wants to go to. And I just don't think that what they serve is actual food. It's like, it's not food. It might taste good, but it's a drug. And you can have food that we buy at the grocery store that's in our refrigerator at home. And, you know, and that's, of course, a value of mine, but it's also, it's like the power, the knowing the power of that drug. And, you know, it's like, well, I can't go nearby it. So anyways, just being completely abstinent, entirely abstinent is the only thing that's brought me peace of mind, peace that, okay, now I can get better in my life in spiritual ways and emotional ways, because I actually can focus and I actually can work on it. And I don't have to second guess myself all the time about, oh, am I feeling this way because I ate something weird yesterday? Or am I feeling this way because I'm craving something? You know, it's like, no, it takes that guessing work out of the picture, because life is so confusing as it is. I don't need to make it worse with eating the wrong food or the foods that are alcoholic to me. So I did want to just plug in, you know, the fact that our bodies are different than normal eaters. We can't handle certain foods safely, and they cause us to want more of it. And so putting those down completely is the first surrender. And I like that surrender point. Like I just, you know, it's not an option. And then it's like, I don't even want it. You know, the desire goes away. I went to a party yesterday. There were probably 100 people at this party outdoors, and they had, you know, tons of food that I couldn't eat, but it was like, oh, no big deal. So I just had fun. Anyways, I see that we're going over time, so I'll shut up. Thanks.